Translation, in terms of his various manifestations, he is known in three features, called the impersonal Brahman, the localized Paramatma, and the original personality of Godhead. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained the word Bhagavan in his Bhagavad Sandarbha. The personality of Godhead, being full of all conceivable and inconceivable potencies, is the absolute supreme whole. So in other words, that which can be conceived of and that which cannot be conceived of. He includes all of that. Impersonal Brahman is a partial manifestation of the absolute truth realized in the absence of such complete potencies. The first syllable of the word Bhagavan is Bha, which means sustainer and protector. The next letter, Gha, means leader, pusher, and creator. Vha means dwelling. All living beings dwell in the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord dwells within the heart of every living being. Combining all these concepts, the word Bhagavan carries the import of inconceivable potency in knowledge, energy, strength, opulence, power, and influence, devoid of all varieties of inferiority. So it means that he's the supreme to an unlimited extent, with all opulences, all power, all energy, all knowledge, strength, and influence. Without such inconceivable potencies, one cannot fully sustain or protect. Our modern civilization is sustained by scientific arrangements devised by many great scientific brains. We can just imagine, therefore, the gigantic brain whose arrangements sustain the gravity of the unlimited number of planets and satellites, and who creates the unlimited space in which they float. If one considers the intelligence needed to orbit man-made satellites, one cannot be fooled into thinking that there is not a gigantic intelligence responsible for the arrangements of the various planetary systems. There is no reason to believe that all the gigantic planets float in space without the superior arrangement of a superior intelligence. The subject is clearly dealt with in the Bhagavad Gita 15:13, where the personality of Godhead says, "I enter into each planet, and by my energy they stay in orbit." Were the planets not held in the grip of the personality of Godhead, they would all scatter like dust in the air. Modern scientists can only impractically explain this inconceivable strength of the personality of Godhead. So now this argumentation that Prabhupada's just given, it's noteworthy, especially noteworthy, because, first of all, he gives an analogy of the scientists, many brilliant persons who are required to put satellites in space. And then he says, so if it took that much intelligence to put these tiny little objects in orbit around the Earth, then we can understand, logically you can infer, that there has to be a greater intelligence that's suspending all the planets. So this is a point in logic. So he establishes his point very strongly in logic, and then what does he do? He quotes Shastra. So when it comes to authority, we may offer logic as a means by which people can understand things, but ultimately our authority is the Vedic literature. So the Vedic literature is the basis of, or the potency behind our logic. In other words, our logic may stand or fall. There are many logicians, and there are greater logicians, always a greater logician than... We may be a great logician, but there's always greater ones. So by logic, you can prove practically anything. One time, Prabhupada was giving a lecture in Bombay, and so this man objected to... what Prabhupada was saying. He said, it seems to me this is simply sentiment. I want you to establish the existence of God by logic. So then Prabhupada gave him a series of logical arguments, and if I had a better memory, I could remember all the arguments, but they were really good. And he gave him a whole series of logical arguments, and the man became a little quiet. So then Prabhupada said, are you asking if he was satisfied? And the man says, well, I don't think you can prove everything by logic. So first of all, he asked for logic. Then he was upset that Prabhupada had provided it. So Prabhupada said, yes, but since you have asked for logic, I have given it to you. So then the man said, so then what is your point? Prabhupada said, Krishna is God, take it. So actually that's the way we argue. We give logical arguments and we say, and for authority, we cite the Vedic literature. We say that these statements are infallible. And you can try to prove otherwise. Just like the example that Prabhupada gives in Ishopanishad, that the dung of the animal is considered impure. But that is also a statement that the dung of a cow is pure and can be used for cleansing purposes. So this seems to be contradictory and ridiculous. However, the scientists actually ran a whole series of tests and found that it contained all kinds of antiseptic properties, cow dung. They couldn't explain it, why it should be there, why it was, but the fact is they had to admit that it contained all kinds of antiseptic properties. So we accept the authority of the Vedic literature. We don't require experimentation. Others who may require it, so far as they're able, they may test it. Just like, for instance, we say that the if there are many statements in the Vedic literature about the nature of this universe, and for instance, there's an actual figure given for the duration of this particular Brahmanda or universe as being 311 trillion, I think it's 40 billion or 40 million, I can't remember which, 311 trillion plus years. That's the duration. And recently, some research has turned up that the scientists are estimating a similar duration for the universe. So it was already there in the Vedic literature. We accept it as axiomatic authority. So here Prabhupada is using this type of analysis. You give logic, you give very convincing explanations, and then you cite the authority of the Vedas. So therefore it's very important, just as a lawyer has to know his law books. So if you're going to be a preacher, you have to know these things. You have to know this science. So we have three kinds of degrees. We have this Bhakta Shastri, which is like the BS or the BA, whichever you want to, however you want to look at it. But we would say it's more of a science. Then we have the first six cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the second six, and then finally for PhD study, this book, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I'm going to give, as soon as I get through this purport, which will be quickly, I'm going to give a little history of the Bhakta Shastri. Sometimes people think, oh, this is just some people think, I mean, not maybe not many, but that this is just some program they made up to keep people engaged. But actually, the Prabhupada was insisting on this, establishing this study of his books in a very systematic way. He started talking about it in 1968. And he continued to discuss it and emphasize his desire that this systematic study of his books go on right up until his departure, practically. So, anyway, let me go on with this purport. And he points out that the final thing in his logic here, first he establishes logic, then he gives the authority of Shastra, and then he says, so if they have another explanation, let's hear it. He says, without the planets being held in their positions, they would all scatter like dust in the air. Modern scientists can only impractically explain this inconceivable strength. So in other words, if they have a better explanation, let's hear it. They don't. The potencies of the syllables Bha, ga, and va apply in terms of many different meanings. Through his different potent agents, the Lord protects and sustains everything. But he himself personally protects and sustains only his devotees, just as a king personally sustains and protects his own children while entrusting the protection and sustenance of the state to various administrative agents. The Lord is the leader of his devotees, as we learn from the Bhagavad Gita, which mentions that the personality of Godhead personally instructs his loving devotees how to make certain progress on the path of devotion and thus surely approach the kingdom of God. The Lord is also the recipient of all the adoration offered by his devotees, for whom he is the objective and the goal. For his devotees, the Lord creates a favorable condition for developing a sense of transcendental love of Godhead. Sometimes he does this by taking away a devotee's material attachments by force and baffling all his material protective agents. For thus, the devotee must completely depend on the Lord's protection. In this way, the Lord proves himself the leader of his devotees. So if the Lord particularly favors anyone, we've heard this many times, it frightens a lot of people. If he really favors you, it says he takes away all your material attachments by force. Prabhupada actually cited himself as an example of this. And then when he said, I have personal experience. And then devotees in the audience started laughing because they thought Prabhupada was joking. He said, no, it's not a joke. I can't remember the exact words. He said, it's not a joke. He said, if it happens to you, you will be very morose. So by force, sometimes these attachments are removed and the devotee has to completely depend then on the Lord's protection. He realizes at that point, well, I haven't got anything else to take shelter of, so let me take shelter of Krishna. Finally, he comes to the right point, forcibly. Just like if you live in Vrindavan, whether you like getting purified or not, you'll be forcibly purified. This is the potency of the Dham, that if you live there, even if you're trying to avoid Krishna, you cannot avoid him. You'll be forcibly purified, willingly or unwillingly. The Lord is not directly attached to the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world, for he is eternally busy in the enjoyment of transcendental bliss with paraphernalia composed of his internal potencies. Yet, as the initiator of the material energy as well as the marginal potency, the living beings, he expands himself as the Purusha avatars who are invested with potencies similar to his. The Purusha avatars are also in the category of Bhagavat Tattva because each and every one of them is identical with the original form of the personality of Godhead. So I'm assuming all of you know who the Purusha avatars are. Most of you must be at least Bhaktashastris by now. So the living entities are his infinitesimal particles and are qualitatively one with him. They are sent into this material world for material enjoyment, to fulfill their desires to be independent individuals. So due to our desire to be independent individuals, we're here, not doing very well. But still they are subject to the supreme will of the Lord. The Lord deputes himself in the state of super soul to supervise the arrangements for such material enjoyment. The example of a temporary fair is quite appropriate in this connection. If the citizens of a state resemble in a fair to enjoy for a short period, the government deputes a special officer to supervise it. So Paramatma is being compared to an officer that directs a fair which is temporarily set up somewhere outside of town. You notice it's set up outside of town, usually in some open space that nobody cares that much about. That's like this material world. And then the officer in charge of the affairs there in this sort of carnival-like atmosphere is the Paramatma. So that's our situation. We're at the fair that's been temporarily set up to bewilder people into believing they can be enjoyers in this material world. So it says, such an officer is invested with all governmental power and therefore he is identical with the government. When the fair is over, there is no need for such an officer, and he returns home. The Paramatma is compared to such an officer. So Paramatma is a temporary manifestation of the Absolute Truth. He's here as long as the material creation is here, and then he is amalgamated back into the Karvadakshai Vishnu, who is then also absorbed into the Mahavishnu. In this way, the whole creation is withdrawn into the pores of Mahavishnu. Paramatma no longer required unless there's a material manifestation. So the living beings, Prabhupada says, are not all in all. They are undoubtedly parts of the Supreme Lord and are qualitatively one with him, yet they are subject to his control. Thus they are never equal to the Lord or one with him. The Lord who associates with the living being is the Paramatma or Supreme Living Being. No one therefore should view the tiny living beings and supreme living beings to be on an equal level. So this is a point that you'll find again and again and again made in throughout Prabhupada's books, that the living being is never to be equated with the supreme being, Krishna. The all-pervading truth that exists eternally during the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material world, and in which the living beings rest in trance, is called the impersonal Brahman. So here we have, and then in the next verse here, it's going to quote the verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatva tatvam yad jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti shabdite, about the three different aspects of the Absolute Truth, and there'll be some elaborate discussion of each one. So I'm going to cut this a little short today, because I've been asked to speak and I don't have much time, so I'll try to have to speed up my delivery here. But I wanted to say a few things about this, because it's the graduation. We're going to be observing the graduation ceremony of some of the students, Bhakti Shastri students, today. Sometimes it's good to hear a little bit about the history of how this all came about. And as I mentioned earlier, from 1968 onwards, Prabhupada was talking about the importance of studying his books in a systematic way. And in 68 and 69, he was talking about composing an examination that would be held in Los Angeles of Bhagavad Gita. And quite a number of people took that exam. And devotees started putting their names and then comma Bhakti Shastri after they passed it. But it didn't really get all that much development initially. But anyway, in 1976, it was finally more or less the present form of study was described by Prabhupada in more elaborate terms to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and then he sent out a letter to all the governing body commissioners. And I'm just going to read that. To all governing body commissioners, re-examinations for awarding titles of Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta, and Bhakti Sarvabhauma. So as we were saying, the Bhakti Shastri is like the bachelor's degree. Bhakti Vaibhava and Bhakti Vedanta are like the master's study. And Bhakti Sarvabhauma, that's the PhD, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Dear Prabhus, please accept my most humble obeisances. Srila Prabhupada has requested me to write you in regard to the above examinations which he wishes to institute. Here in India, many persons often criticize our sannyasis and brahmanas as being unqualified due to insufficient knowledge of the scriptures. Factually, there are numerous instances where our sannyasis and brahmanas have fallen down, often due to insufficient understanding of the philosophy. You know, we used to use this expression in the old days that a devotee was fixed up. I don't know, maybe it's still in use. So-and-so is really a fixed-up devotee. What that meant was that the person was convinced, not only convinced of the philosophy, that he could present it convincingly also, that he had conviction and he had knowledge. So Prabhupada was emphasizing this point. This should not be a point, Tamal Krishna Maharaj writes, this should not be a point of criticism nor a reason for fall down, since Srila Prabhupada has mercifully made the most essential scriptures available to us in his books. The problem is that not all the devotees are carefully studying the books, the result being a fall down or at least unsteadiness. His divine grace therefore wishes to institute examinations to be given to all prospective candidates for sannyas and Brahman initiation. In addition, he wishes that all present sannyasis and brahmanas also pass the examination. Awarding of these titles will be based upon the following books: Bhakti Shastri, Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, Ishopanishad, Easy Journey to Other Planets, and all the other small paperbacks, as well as Archana Padati, a book to be compiled by Nitai Prabhu based on Hari Bhakti Vilas, on deity worship. So this was the original proposal, to include all the smaller books, not just the four that we generally study, but you should be conversant with basically everything that Prabhupada wrote. And he wanted people to understand the science of deity worship, Archana Paditi. Is there an authorized version of Archana Paditi yet? I don't know. There was one published some years back, but
it was published here in England.
Oh, was it? Okay.
It was compiled upstairs, yeah.
Okay. Okay. So that's something else that he wanted for Bhakti Shastri. So especially your Bhakti Shastri, you still have a little bit more to go, actually, according to this. Bhakti Vaibhava, all of the above, plus the first six cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Vedanta, all of the above, plus cantos 7 through 12 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Sarvabhauma, all of the above, plus the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita. Anyone wishing to be initiated as a brahmana will have to pass the Bhakti Shastri exam, and anyone wishing to take sannyas will have to pass the Bhakti Vaibhava examination as well. This will prevent our society from degrading to the level of so many other institutions where, in order to maintain the temple, they accept all third-class men as brahmanas. Any sannyasis or brahmanas already initiated who fail to pass the exams will be considered low-class or less qualified. Anyone wishing to be second initiated will sit for examination once a year in Mayapur. Answers will be in essay form and authoritative quotations will be given a bigger score. During the exams, books may not be consulted. Srila Prabhupada wishes to begin this program at this year's Mayapur meeting. He requests that you all send your opinions and comments here immediately so that everything may be prepared in time. So that was kind of, after many years of discussing what the curriculum would actually be, this was kind of the final word on it. But prior to this, for instance, this was written in 1969. Prabhupada had this idea. He says, I want that all of my spiritual sons and daughters will inherit this title of Bhaktivedanta, so that the family transcendental diploma will continue through the generations. It's kind of a nice statement, isn't it? Those possessing the title of Bhaktivedanta will be allowed to initiate disciples. Now here, just listen how hopeful Prabhupada was. Maybe by 1975, all of my disciples will be allowed to initiate and increase the numbers of the generations. That's optimism. That is my program, so we should not simply publish these books for reading by outsiders, but our students must be well-versed in all our books so that we can be prepared to defeat all opposing parties in the matter of self-realization. Now, this is a significant sentence. They must be well-versed so that we can be prepared to defeat all the opposing parties in the matter of self-realization. It means you have to be a strong preacher, you have to know these how to argue, how to present. Just as Prabhupada can answer any question. Of course, you can. Oh, well, he was a self-realized soul, but it doesn't mean that we should remain in ignorance. We should be knowledgeable. Actually, at one point this was in 1969 also, he was really thinking about it a lot. And he said that the complete course will require at least 7 years study. And then, in 1969, in Los Angeles, he gave the first exam. I just wanted to read it to you. It gives the questions that the questions Prabhupada himself composed for an exam on the Bhagavad Gita. And he said you could answer the questions in context of scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Samhita, and Ishopanishad. He says the full mark for each question is 100. And here he gave 15 questions. 1. Who is Krishna? 2. What is your relationship with Krishna? 3. What are you expected to do with your relationship to Krishna? 4. What is the aim of Krishna consciousness? 5. What do you mean by religion? 6. In Krishna consciousness, is Krishna consciousness a type of religion or religious faith? 7, how do you distinguish between religion and faith? Prabhupada's questions are very intelligent. Can religion or faith be changed from one type to another? How do you distinguish between changeable and eternal religion? What are the different types of religious faiths? Can religion be manufactured by philosophical speculation? Who created religion first? That's a subordinate question to that question. Can it be manufactured, and who created it? What is the greatest common engagement of religious men? Now, there's an interesting question. What is the greatest common engagement of religious men? What would you say? Come on. I think I like that answer. Any others? Glorification of the Supreme, preaching, Jiva Dharma, yeah, maybe, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Aiming to love God.
Aiming, yeah. I think you could say aiming, definitely. Right. Okay, I got curious about that. All right. Do you believe that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Actually, he used to ask these questions sometimes to his leaders. Are you convinced? And he would look at them one by one, and he wanted an answer, too. It wasn't just a rhetorical question. If you believe, and this is the follow-up, if you believe, how do you substantiate? If not, what is your reason? Rigorous. What is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan? Now, he always said NB, not PS. Answer papers with some contribution to my book fund. It says, answer papers with some contribution to my book fund may be submitted to me. I shall personally examine the papers, and those who will pass will be sent a certificate of Bhakti Shastri in due course. The minimum passing mark is 300 out of 1,000. So he was probably a pretty tough grader. Now, there's another nice point he makes in 1975 in a letter to Sarup Damodar. He says, it's not just that he wants us to become bookworms, he says. There must be life. Rising early in the morning, attending Mangal Arati, taking prasadam, etc. In other words, that it's not just an academic, theoretical study that should be practiced. There should be practice, otherwise there won't be much realization. So it's all right to have knowledge, but there has to be, for there to be realized knowledge, there has to be practice. He says the titles can correspond to entrance BAMA PhD. Now, it's interesting, a couple of years back, Rabindra Sarup wrote an article discussing the history of Bhakti Shastri and the idea of Prabhupada for these degrees. And he said, let me note another important indication of ISKCON's failure to organize Brahminical training. In 1976, Prabhupada ordered a gradated system of examinations to be instituted in ISKCON. To this day, this order is unfulfilled. We've managed to create Bhakti Shastri, but so far as the other degrees, they're still in the theoretical, they're still in the dreaming state. Hopefully that's going to change. There are some plans afoot to create studies for the Srimad Bhagavatam initially, and then after that for the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that's a little history of the Bhakti Shastri. I still have a few more minutes. I wanted to give you a sense of Prabhupada's stress, personal stress, on the study of his books. So I compile some statements. One thing, when he came to Vrindavan in 1977 and he had some indications from Krishna that he was going to leave fairly soon. So when he arrived, he made this statement. Whatever I have wanted to say, I have said in my books. If I live, I will say something more. If you want to know me, read my books. So this is a very important statement that Prabhupada, as the founder acharya of this movement, of this society, everything that we do
And no leader will dispute this. Everything that we do, everything that we are, is the result of Prabhupada's mercy. And the basis of everything we do is found in these books. So Prabhupada spent so much time and energy composing these books. Right up to the very end of his life, he was dictating his purports. Even when he had not eaten for months, he was still trying to deliver this knowledge. So, at one point, one of his disciples recalls that Prabhupada said to him, "Why don't you read my books? Even I read them when I have spare time. Why do you think I read them? Do you think that these books were written by me? No, they were written by Krishna. That's why I read them. Every time when I start writing, Krishna comes and sits beside me. He inspires each and every word that I write down. These books are not ordinary writings. This is transcendental literature." Then a couple of short statements. "You can associate with me by reading my books. I have spoken in my books. Now try to understand. If you read my books, your spiritual desires will be fulfilled." It's a nice one. If you have any spiritual desires, they can be fulfilled. "If you read my books, you will be benefited." Not my books, Krishna's books. Then another one, he says, the purports are my devotional ecstasies. Sasarup Maharaj writes, through his books, he shared these conversations with the whole world. When he says conversations, he means his conversations with Krishna. Through his books, he shared these conversations with the whole world. His purports are a special, intimate communion with him, and through them, we can know Krishna. Nice point. If we want to know Krishna, we should read Prabhupada's books. Just a couple more. Boy, I'm actually sticking to the time schedule. I can't believe it. Sasarupa Maharaj also writes, "Prabhupada often showed his great determination to continue writing despite the material circumstances, like the time when his typewriter was stolen on the Bowery, or in Bombay when every morning the barking of the street dogs threatened to spoil his meditation, or in Vrindavan when the deadly loo from the Rajputan desert began, and he remained outside on the porch despite the danger, accepting only a chadar to protect him from the hot winds. He continued his translation up until the end of his life. In the last weeks of 1977, he was too weak to hold a microphone. Jayadvaita Swami and other devotees surrounded his bed, holding a microphone close to his mouth to catch his words, which were barely audible. In this condition, he finished the 10th canto, chapter 13. And he makes a final statement, which I think is very nice. He says, and this is the last one, so... Srila Prabhupada said that he did not write the books, Krishna did. This is a mystical statement and is difficult to understand. But we can understand that Prabhupada was a Shaktivesh avatar, a directly empowered messenger of Krishna. And in this way, everything he says is reflective of Krishna's speaking. He also faithfully repeated the words of Krishna without adulteration or addition. So in that sense, the books are speaking. And Prabhupada's words definitely carry the potency of Krishna. They make devotees. So, another important point in getting people to read these books is that actually they have such power and potency, these books, that they actually create devotees of Krishna. So, our time is up. I'll stop there. If there's just one or two questions...